What is up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to episode 244 of the Massive Breakdown Podcast. I'm pretty sure that's what it is. 244 of the Massive Breakdown Podcast. Should have checked that before we started. But anyways, we have a great show for you tonight. We're going to be keeping with the theme of setting our baselines for 2022. So we have talked about the weapon meta. We have defined a bunch of terminology for you guys. Ease of use, lethality, stuff like that. Now we're going to be talking about subclasses. We obviously just had a bunch of subclass tuning happen where we got variable ability cooldowns and everything. So we were talking about how the subclass meta has kind of been shaping up. Unfortunately, we do not have accurate usage numbers because it appears that Guardian.gg, which used to be the way that everybody tracks subclass usage, is no longer being updated live. Or anyways, they don't have stasis on there, and it looks like it hasn't been updated in quite some time. So we will kind of just be going over each subclass one by one, each tree, talking about how we feel it is relative to the rest of the meta, whether we feel it's strong, whether we feel it's popular, whether we see a bunch of them, what we have personally chosen to play. And yeah, I think it's going to be a pretty good episode. And that will probably wrap up the baselines that we have. It'll be interesting later on in the year to look back on these three episodes and see how much stuff has changed as the year has progressed, or really even just immediately following Witch Queen's release. But before we hop into all that stuff, let's get the introductions out of the way. As always, I'm your host, Mercules, joined tonight by Kit Kutcha. How are you doing this evening, Kit?
Well, Mercules, I am hanging in there. I am the only one in my house that does not currently have COVID-19. Not sure which variant it is that caught us, but my money is on Omicron because every single one of us has had at least one shot. And my wife has had three, and she still got it. So it's real infectious. The bright side is it's really just not that bad, at least, you know, for us. I have to assume that the antibodies are helping quite a bit. So we're masking in the house, and I'm going to stay healthy. And if it means that everyone has to stay 6 feet away from me for the rest of the week, then so be it.
They will make that sacrifice for you to avoid getting COVID.
That's right. That's right. They're both willing. So I guess that means they both still love me. And what more can a guy ask for?
Yeah. I am somehow kind of surprised. I mean, knock on wood, that I did not get it. I mean, that I know of from my bachelor party last weekend. But we made a conscious effort to avoid the bars and the crowds and everything in Key West. And we kind of just stuck with our own little group. Obviously, scuba diving, there's not a super high chance you're going to get it when you're scuba diving, given that you're underwater.
Seems like a safer activity choice.
Yeah, and golfing, it's not like you're around a bunch of people who you don't know, right? Because you're just in your own little golf carts. And then the last day, we rented a boat, and it was just us on the boat. So we kind of stayed away and did our own thing. And I think it was about probably the safest bachelor party you could have in the midst of a pandemic like this. But yeah, that's pretty unfortunate that your family managed to get it, but I'm glad to hear everybody's doing all right. I know you had to cancel some plans this weekend, which is a huge bummer for you.
Yeah. Yeah, it threw a wrench. My wife has been training for an ultra marathon for the last, 3, 4, 5 months. And it was Sunday this week, and we are not going to be able to go. But, you know, it is what it is. Technically, I think her quarantine can end on the day of the race, but she feels she's not going to be recovered. We're not really sure that 5 days of quarantine is, I'm not convinced that that's really enough. And, you know, going out and running 30 miles after having been sick with COVID just doesn't seem like the healthy choice. So for those reasons, we're out.
Well, although you don't get to go to an ultra marathon on Sunday, you know what you do get to do on Sunday?
I do
record beneath twin suns.
I do get to record beneath twin suns. Now, I wasn't going to be running. My daughter and I were going to go kayak the Rio Grande and hike and like just have fun. But, you know, beneath twin suns is a good consolation prize. I'm not mad about it. I mean, I am mad about it, but ultimately, I'll be over it by this weekend, I think.
And we have a lot to talk about because we had episode 2 of Boba Fett and now episode 3 of Boba Fett. Episode 2, I think, universally loved. Episode 3, quite a bit more polarizing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's going to be an interesting episode because chapters 2 and 3 of Boba Fett. I mean, the story is moving. I don't want to spend any more time on it than that, but the story is moving along. That is for sure.
Gonna have a ton of fun talking about that one on Sunday. It's gonna be Sunday evening, I guess, because I actually have a friend's birthday brunch that we're supposed to go to in the morning. So I don't know that I can dip out of that and be like, sorry guys, gotta go record a podcast on Star Wars, can't go to your birthday. But we'll definitely get to it Sunday evening for release Monday morning as per usual.
Yeah, and now you guys know a whole lot about our personal plans, possibly way more than you tuned in for.
Oh, it's all good. I think the people who don't want to listen to this stuff just automatically skip the first 10 minutes of the show every single week, so they probably don't hear it anyways.
As they should. But they are missing out. Just in case you haven't heard on a very exciting Destiny-related announcement that we are just absolutely thrilled to share with everyone who listens, who supports the podcast in any way. This is something that we have talked about for a long time. It's something that a lot of listeners, Discordians, and patrons have asked for literally for years. And now it's real. And if you don't follow us on Twitter, or maybe you've been hiding from Twitter to avoid Boba Fett spoilers, as I was for a few days this week, you probably haven't heard that we now have a PvE show. That's right. Destiny Massive Breakdown's PvE, Podcast versus Enemies. Now, the name, I gather, sparked a little bit of controversy about what it is that PvE stands for. And basically, I'm just going to say that we didn't want to be getting a bunch of climate change traffic. We were interested in Destiny and video game related traffic, and so we're happy with the name we chose, and we're going to stick with it. But yeah, it's very exciting to launch that, and possibly the best news of all is that Mercules and I are not hosting it, which means you do not have to listen to us trying to figure out what in-game PvE players want, because we don't know. We have no idea. We're competent Destiny players in all regards, but we are not grandmasters by any means. We are not Gilded Conqueror Seal players, and that's okay, because we've got a fantastic crew running this show for us, and I'll let you go ahead and do the introductions for them. They're not going to be on this episode, but we can at least give them some shout outs and point you in the right direction.
Yeah, so especially if you guys are active in the Discord, you'll probably know all of these names. But and I'm also going to butcher the first one. Saint Kabir is Kabir actually how it's pronounced? So
yes,
I actually didn't butcher.
That's correct.
Yeah,
you nailed it.
What sucks is I listened to the episode and I heard him introduce himself and I made a note. I was like, oh, I need to remember how he pronounced that because I'm pretty sure I'm going to pronounce it wrong if I ever have to actually say it out loud. Yeah, Saint Kabir. We've got a solitary bird and we've got Court, the spreadsheet master, in there. So we actually have three very, very experienced PvE players, three people who have spent a lot of time helping people in our community specifically. I know that Court helps a lot in Destiny Science, and both Saint and Solitary Bird do a ton of Sherping in our community. So we felt like they were probably three of the best people we could have gotten. We know that they're invested. We know they're all really smart, really kind, good people. And so we reached out to them and they were all willing to be on the show. And we also nabbed ourselves a fantastic audio engineer and Mr. Sutton. You may remember him as the guy who taught me how to finally use a microphone that I'd been using for almost 6 years at this point and greatly increased our sound quality. So he's going to be the audio engineer.
Yeah.
And I think he's also going to be a part-time fill-in host. It turns out he actually runs a ton of dungeons and grandmasters as well. So might not be as scientific as some of the other people, but I think he'll be a really, really fine substitute host. And I'm really excited about the show. The show did absolutely killer for its first episode, like really doing amazingly well for the first episode of a show, like ranking in the top 10 of, you know, gaming podcast for growth, right? Which is what's tracked a lot of times on Apple Podcasts is the actual growth. And, you know, when you get potentially 500 followers in a day on Apple Podcasts. Like it kicks you up the charts, and the episode did really well. And it was a great episode too. I listened to the whole thing while I was at the gym, and I even messaged Kush after, and I was like, man, we really lucked out with how smooth that went. Like it doesn't sound like a first episode. It sounds like a 50th episode. So
yeah, no, they did a fantastic job. And personally, I am really looking forward to their future episodes because, you know, as much as I love PvP, I feel like I have been missing out on part of the game. We spent a lot of time talking to them. They sherped me through a dungeon, and I'm suddenly reminded that I actually love the PvE side of this game and the high-end PvE side. And a lot of times my obstacle is time commitment and having people that I'm comfortable playing with. I'm very much a solo player these days, and I don't branch out a lot. It's just not part of my personality. I'm not a super outgoing person, despite being on a podcast and on two podcasts. But they are truly fantastic, and I had a great time, and it really I think put a little bug in my head to do more. So now I'm just saying, if it can convince me to dive back in to the in-game PvE side after all these years of slowly drifting further and further away from it, it might be worth your time.
I'm just looking forward to having a place to point people when they're like, why did you recommend Swashbuckler, Grave Robber, and Cartesian Coordinate? I'm like, well, you know, if you don't like my recommendations for PvE, you can go find some people who actually know what they're talking about for PvE, and you can ask them how they feel about it. But yeah, really stoked about the show. Excited to see it grow. Excited to kind of become its own thing. I'm excited that you and I are like executive producers. We're like the Dave Filoni and John Favreau of the Massive Breakdown Cinematic Universe or podcast.
That's an incredibly
universe.
Flattering comparison, and I'll take it.
Well, you know, we'll do some crossovers at some point in time, and we'll start dropping hints about storylines that are going to be picked up years in advance. And, you know, it's we said a long time ago that, like, we really wanted at some point in time to turn Massive Breakdowns into more of, like, a network. And obviously spinning Beneath Twin Suns off to be its own thing, and now bringing up PvE, which the freaking emblem is so cool. Like, I legitimately really love the podcast, like, logo for that show. So it's the start of a network, and hopefully at some point in time we'll be able to do some more stuff, but I'm pretty happy with how it's shaped.
Yeah, if you want to see my growth in graphic design and creating logos, you can just you can look at the Massive Breakdowns logo, and then you can look at the PvE logo, and I think you'll see some slight development in the ability.
A lot of iterative development on the PvE logo too. People should look at the history of what that logo started as, and the original ideas, and like how it morphed into what it is. But anyways, enough about that other show. They can tell you about themselves when they record their second episode this Sunday. I think we have a lot of housekeeping to get to.
We do have a few things left. So if you've skipped forward and you're now listening to this and a little confused, we've got a new show we had to introduce. So we're a little behind getting the housekeeping done for this episode. One final note, PvE does have its own feed. So you'll want to search for Destiny PvE podcast versus enemies in order to find that show. Follow it, subscribe to it, show them some love, drop a review, all that good stuff. And with that, let's talk about Patreon. We have some thank yous to dish out, as we often do. And this week, we are saying thank you to three new patrons who have joined since our last episode. So I'm going to start by thanking someone who I don't even know how I feel about him joining Patreon at this point. But we've got to say a big thank you to Court for deciding to support the show. So thank you so much to Court for contributing to Patreon, and thank you for being a host of PvE. I feel like you're paying for the privilege of hosting now, and I'm not sure that's right. I think you might be doing us the favor.
He did not buy his way into being a host. We actually had set the show up, and we had talked to Bird and Sutton and everybody, and we made an announcement in the patrons channel. And I was like, everybody say hello to Bird and Saint because they're already in the channel and you guys can talk to them. And I was like, and the third host isn't here, but we'll introduce him when he decides to actually, like, you know, go live on the show, because he's not going to be in it for the first couple episodes. And then, like, literally 10 minutes later, I saw Court show up in the patron channel. I was like, oh, I guess he's here now. So welcome to the third host as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So big thank you. Also, a very special thank you to a guy named David. We don't appreciate you any less for your pledge than we do, Court. Everyone who contributes and supports Destiny Massive Breakdowns and all the stuff we're trying to do is valued equally. And so we really appreciate that. And likewise, thank you to Ross Tang for your support and generosity. It means a great deal to us, as does the support of all of our ongoing patrons. I hope that everyone who picked up some of the 2021 patron exclusive items is enjoying them. And I hope that everyone who joined during that period is looking forward to February and March, when we drop the big orders and get a whole bunch of stuff shipped out. Going to be some massive, massive loot drops coming up in the next couple of months. So very excited about that.
I'm most impressed that we managed to lose money on the store. Despite actively trying to do all the math so that we could break even on it, we still managed to lose money on the store.
Yeah,
we are very good at that.
It doesn't help when I don't understand how the shipping charges are supposed to work, and I just give a few people free shipping. But you know what? We learned a lot, and we'll do better next time. You know what? It feels good to me to give back to the community that's given so much to us. So I'm not even worried about it. Speaking of people who are incredibly generous to Destiny Massive Breakdowns and to you and to I, let's say some thank yous to our sponsors. Big, massive shout outs to the following in no particular order this week: The Shazzle, Starscream S13, Conquer King 420, ASCII and Monk, This Moment 23, Blackhammer Tech, ZenSoCal, Binary Wolf, Deacon, and a Solitary Bird, who also did not buy his way into that hosting position. But if you listen to the show, you'll see we did pick him for his knowledge and his skill.
It happens a lot of times that if you are already contributing monetarily to a show, then you're also probably tied into the community and contributing to the community and stuff too. Like, we actually, Saint got in by straight up reaching out and, like, volunteering to be the PvE guy on Massive Breakdowns. And I was like, you know, hey, I appreciate it, but, like, I don't want a third person on Massive Breakdowns because I don't want to, you know, increase my editing basically by 50%, which is what I'd have to do it. But I said, you know, to be honest, he basically, like, sent me, like, a resume. And I was like, hey, you know, we plan to, in the future, spin up a PvE podcast. And when we do, if you're interested, I'll reach out to you.
Yeah.
And he said he was. And so a couple months later, when we started to put the idea in motion, we reached out to him. And Bird and Court were both recommended by multiple people in our community when we started kind of broaching the subject just ever so gently. Multiple people reached out and were like, hey, like, Bird has been really helpful running, you know, activities with us. And he's a really good teacher and he's a really good Sherpa. And Court is super, super knowledgeable. I think both of them would be great people on it. So
yeah,
we reached out and they were the first three people we talked to, and all three of them said they're interested. So
yeah,
I really do think we kind of hit it out of the park with that group.
Yeah, no, we definitely got lucky. I mean, the community in the Massive Breakdowns Discord has been phenomenal. It's attracted a lot of great people, which I guess we get some credit for, but honestly, I feel like we didn't know what we were doing when we started. We just knew that we wanted people who were invested in the game and in understanding the mechanics. And it seemed to somehow work out that's the kind of people that joined us. And so here we are all these years later, and we are very blessed to have some great people involved. So with that, I'm going to pass the mic back to you to talk about some other Guardians who deserve thank yous.
Yeah, as always, we'd like to thank the Guardians who leave us reviews and ratings on Apple Podcast and now Spotify as well, although I believe you can only leave a rating on Spotify and not an actual review. But the reviews help us out tremendously with discoverability, with legitimizing the show. We've been fortunate enough to where Massive Breakdowns has been like hovering in the top 50 for video game podcasts. Out of over 10,000 shows, like to be in the top 50 is incredible. And we couldn't do it without you guys. And the ratings and reviews that you provide us along with the listens help a ton. First off, amazing content, knowledgeable host, welcoming community. This is by Judo Dad Joe, who, if you guys are in the Discord, you will recognize that name.
Yeah.
He said, I followed Mercury since Destiny 1, and his contribution to my and now my son's enjoyment of Destiny can never be repaid. This pod, with his co-host Kutch, is a must-listen for any weapons or PvP enthusiast. Their approach is an easy listen while still maintaining the intricacies originally just found on his legendary stat spreadsheet. Massive Breakdown Pod is now required listening for my 13-year-old son and I. We play D2 together and continue our shared love of the game even when we aren't Starside. If you've made it this far, it would be remiss of me not to mention the community Merc and Kutch have fostered. Their Discord is welcoming and knowledgeable, even when indulging a Fighting Lion main's off-meta ramblings. I highly recommend all of their content as both a player and a parent. Knowledgeable, professional, and kid-friendly. Well done, gentlemen. Thanks, Judo Dad Joe and Judo Kid Jaden. That is a really, really great review. That is probably one of my favorite reviews that I think I've ever read. I want to highlight the fact that you said kid-friendly. We do try to keep it PG-13.
Yeah.
We limit the F-bombs to one per episode, which is the rules for PG-13 movies, I believe. And besides that, that's about as much as we could promise. I would not necessarily recommend letting a 7-year-old listen to the show. But I think we do a good job of striding that fine line where, you know, parents can listen to it with their kids, because he's not the first person who's actually said that they listen to it with their kids. So yeah. I'm really glad to hear that it's helping you and your son to enjoy the game a little bit more.
No, you know, and I think we do a pretty good job, because I took my daughter to see Spider-Man actually just before she came down with symptoms. Like, she'd complained about having a headache that morning, which, you know, occasionally kids get headaches, so I didn't think anything of it. 6 hours later, she was like, not so good. So I'm glad that the theater was basically completely empty. There were 6 other people watching the movie with us, and we wore masks, so, you know.
Great movie, though, right?
It was a fantastic movie. The reason I mention it is that there was a lot more swearing than I expected in a Spider-Man movie. And my daughter's 8. But she understands about language. I mean, it's a conversation we've had with her about what's appropriate and what's not appropriate. So it's not a huge deal, but it just threw me for a loop. That, you know, I guess I think of Marvel movies as being family friendly. And it rode the line. It rode the line in terms of like younger kids. But yeah, so I think after seeing that, I felt a lot better about the job we do of trying to maintain a certain level of decorum.
And when we do broach that, like, I think we do a pretty good job of warning that this episode contains higher levels of salt than is usual.
Like, we do try to get the word out when we are feeling salty. So anyways, do we have any other reviews?
We have one additional review, and this guy, Captain Reg, or Reg, I'm not sure which one it is, actually left reviews on both shows, Beneath Twin Suns and Destiny Massive Breakdowns.
My hero.
He said, showed up for the Destiny, 5 stars. This podcast submits itself as a gold standard for all weapons and metas in Destiny. As a long-term Destiny player, it's nice to continue to learn things in the game. However, once I heard the Star Wars podcast, that one truly blows this one out of the water. I'm a huge fan of Star Wars, and I love the intersection of both these things coming together. Of course, I will continue to listen to Destiny Massive Breakdowns, but I'm at the edge of my seat for that next Star Wars pod. See y'all, Starside.
Oh, man.
Trust me, we're excited about the Star Wars podcast, too. I feel like I was really looking forward to the weekly format with Book of Boba Fett, and I'm bummed that we had to skip a week. For good reason, we skipped a week. But I'm really looking forward to talking about Book of Boba. There's a lot to talk about this time.
There is. And the intersection between the fandoms is strong. It really is. So fantastic to hear another fan, because I'm a fan, and very excited. Do we have any more?
No, that's it. So remember, okay, guys, if you want to leave us a review, please do. Apple Podcasts, tremendously helpful. We'll read it out, give you a personal thank you. Also, Beneath Twin Suns, if you can, if you listen to that show, you enjoy that show, definitely review it over there. It takes us 36 reviews before our score will actually show up to be publicly viewed. So that helps us out a ton as well. And man, I think that's probably setting a record for the longest we've ever done housekeeping. I think we're creeping up on 25 minutes now. And we were worried we weren't going to have enough to talk about.
We might need to drop a timestamp in the show notes just to let people know. But yeah, we've talked about a lot of stuff. And I think what we need to do right now, right this minute, is deliver these people some of the Destiny content that they are here for.
Well, we did have a TWAB today. First TWAB in what feels like a very, very long time. It was an interesting one. It's kind of stirred up the community a little bit. Some people are pretty upset about some stuff. There was some good stuff. They said that the artifact mod, the artifact mods are going to be basically unlimited unlocks, right? So yeah, each mod is going to get increasingly expensive. But you could theoretically unlock every single mod on the artifact and have all of them. I think that is a really fantastic change for Witch Queen, because one of the biggest things was how many cool mods there were on the artifact. And it felt kind of crappy to me that you had to limit yourself to only 12 of them.
Hard agree. Yeah, I am very excited about that limit, you know, especially depending on the length of the season. It can be frustrating to be limited when you maybe want to switch things up, and it can be kind of costly to switch it up. And then it's a whole lot of clicking. And then if you don't like it, you got to go and redo it again. Much better if I can just keep playing the game and unlocking more as I go. So I'm thrilled with that change.
And second quality of life change that I think is a really good one is fully masterwork pieces of legendary armor can actually change their energy type with just glimmer and an upgrade module. So 10,000 glimmer for legendaries and one upgrade module, and 20,000 glimmer for exotics and one upgrade module. It's a huge change.
Yeah,
actually, because a lot of the storage that I was doing was just having pieces of armor of different energy types for my given builds. So this is going to be really, really great, especially now that we can do loadouts and stuff like Dim.
Yeah,
this is going to be fantastic.
Yeah, I'm definitely about to use Dim to filter and determine which pieces of armor I need to keep and which ones can go in the trash bin, because I do not need 4 sets of armor on my hunter at all times. That is too much. It is too expensive. And so this is massive for me as well.
And then before we get to the part that's making everybody upset, they did clarify that the 30th anniversary content is going to be here at least through 2022. It will at some point, of course, be going to the vault. But for the next year, for 2022, you'll be able to play it. I think that should be more than enough time for everyone to get what they need out of it. So that was 3 for 3 on really, really positive things that they mentioned. And then they kind of snuck a fourth one in there. I kind of buried the lead a little bit. But they said, closing out, they're making a change to the way Guardians create orbs of power. Elements of the new weapon crafting system will encourage you to use many different weapons, and they said they thought it was a little bit unfair to ask you to burn so many masterwork materials on a weapon that you may only use for just a few hours, just to generate orbs on double kills. And that, combined with the fact that so many people want to generate orbs of power with exotic weapons that do not have catalyst, they didn't really like that orb generation was tied to a masterwork. So they have pulled orb generation out. It no longer is a status of the masterwork, meaning masterwork weapons no longer will generate orbs on double kills. And instead, it is now an armor mod for the helmet, for your helmet. There will be a mod for kinetic, a mod for void solar arc, and imagine a void or and a mod for stasis. So 5 mods total. And when you equip that mod, any double kills with weapons of the matched element type will generate orbs, even if they are not masterworked. So exotics can do it, non-masterworked weapons can do it. It's quite a bit of a change. How you feel about that?
So first read, I was just like, what? took it away from the weapons and you put it as a mod only? Like, but I use those mod slots. And I think that's where a lot of people are right now. I use those mod slots for things. I need my mod slots. I need my energy budget why you do this, Bungie. And I think that's where the community's at, and I think it's probably going to calm down some. But it definitely is one of those two steps forward, two steps backward situations where you feel like you get something you want and you lose something that you really liked. Pay for it. So that hurts. That hurts a lot of people. How are you feeling about it?
Well, I'm of two minds. One, the way it's presented right here, I'm not super stoked on. Just the way it's presented here alone, which is just the straight trade. Moving it from Masterworks, giving it to Helmets. A lot of it's going to depend on the mod cost, right? You know, if it's 0 or 1, I'm going to be not tremendously upset about it. However, a large part of me thinks that there's a reason why this was done that wasn't listed here, based on the replies of developers on Twitter and stuff that they've been quote tweeting and liking. I think, and I saw this theory, I think it was maybe Kujay who posted this on Twitter, but the theory that the fact that a weapon creating an orb on double kills was actually a perk, like a hidden perk, and that removing that will allow an additional perk to be placed onto weapons without running up against their maximum perk capacity. I have a feeling that might actually be the reason why they're doing this. And if that is the case, I'm going to be basically not at all upset about this change.
Right. There are certainly a couple of things that we don't know that could change the calculus for whether or not this change hurts anyone. That's one of them, and I want to talk about that a little bit more. One of the other things that I think we have to consider is that a lot of armor clearly has room for an additional mod slot, because we have, you know, raid armors, just for example, that have an additional mod slot. Other legendary armors could have that mod slot. There's no particular reason why they can't, except that it hasn't been implemented at this time. And so could we see 5 mod slots on every legendary piece of armor in the future? I think the answer is probably, yeah, we could. Exotic armors, I would expect not, because they have an exotic perk that likely eats up one of those functional slots. But I don't know. So there's something to consider there, that we may end up with more room. Could the energy budget on armor change? Yeah, it could. It would likely result in a lot of mod costs being rebalanced to account for it. But it absolutely could be adjusted to allow for a more versatile build at the expense of maybe not having the aim assist mods, for example, go up to prevent abuse in PvP. And what you talked about there, this harkens back to a post from Bungie a while back where they talked about the future of Destiny 2. And one of the things that was talked about was weapon differentiation. And so I'm just going to read straight from Bungie's post here. If I have 2 void adaptive hand cannons, one from the Suros Foundry and one from the latest raid, why do I care about one more than the other? The stats tend to be fairly close. Perk pools can be different, but there are only so many perks, and stretch to say the perk pool gives the weapon its identity. We might beg to differ on this show, but I'll allow it for now. We've got something shipping on all new and reissued weapons in the Witch Queen that addresses this issue directly, and are working to expand the same solution to all weapons that drop in the future. So what that suggests to me is that intrinsic perks are about to get a lot more interesting. Bungie's doing things with the perks on weapons. It's happening in Witch Queen. And it's happening to all guns at some point, possibly at some point this year. So this to me sounds like a very, very clear reason for them to make some room. That argument is only reinforced because literally the paragraph before, they say, "We don't like that the desire for exotic catalysts is largely driven by the orbs of power generation they provide and have something in the works to let players build around that limitation." Are these two things likely connected by this change? I feel that it would be difficult to argue otherwise. So, for now, I'm gonna hold my breath and wait to see what Bungie is going to share in next week's TWAB and in the TWAB after that, because we know they're going to have some big info bombs for us. There's a lot of stuff that they need to preview before Witch Queen drops. They're going to hold a lot of story back, a lot of secrets back. But when it comes to Sandbox, they'll play their cards close to the vest up until about the month before a launch, right? And then they're going to tell us what's up.
Yeah, it's not ridiculous to say that you don't like an idea that's presented when it's presented with a lack of context.
Absolutely.
Right. But at the same time, it's also not ridiculous to say, hey, we need to wait until we have the rest of the context before we can make an informed decision on whether this change is a positive or a negative. And so that being said, like, as I clarified earlier, the way it's written right here, I'm not the biggest fan of it. I'm not horrendously angry. Like, I could move my mods around on my helmet and make some space for that. And to be totally honest, like, I'm one of the people who should be the most upset because I wholeheartedly abuse Charge with Light with Le Monarch and PvP.
Yep.
And the orb generation is a huge, huge facet of that. So asking me to do a little bit more building into it as opposed to just getting it granted to me by spending materials, you know, I can see that being fair. I think someone on my Twitter said they should have just phrased it as, "This is how we're nerfing Le Monarch," is we're making it harder to get orbs for Charge with Light, and people would have responded better to it. So definitely something we're going to need to keep an eye on. I'm not guaranteeing it's going to be a good change in the long term. It might not be. But at the same time, I definitely think it's way too early to declare it a for sure bad change. And a little bit of the outrage is overblown. But hey, that's what the Destiny community does sometimes, is they hear stuff and they overreact.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people, the refrain is, I need ammo finders. I don't need orbs. And that's fine. You know, if that's your preference, I think that's what it is. There are other ways. In PvE especially, there are a lot of ways to activate Charge with Light. You do not need orbs. It made it easier. And I think for the, you know, the hardcore PvE players, making PvE slightly less easy is not a bad thing, because a lot of PvE really is not that challenging once you get down to it, or if you have a good fire team. Soloing PvE content is a whole other debate, but bottom line, it is a change that's going to have some resounding effects. Charge with Light in PvP, this is a huge adjustment to how that works. It's going to require an additional mod to take advantage of it. And maybe two. You know, maybe depending on where you put them, maybe you run for energy and kinetic and you end up with more orbs. So, you know, there are going to be costs and trade-offs and potential benefits.
And I know for a fact that if I could run a Void one, I will end up with more orbs than I would have before. Because with Le Monarch, like, I can get a double kill when I'm empowered and then pick up an orb and give myself double Charge with Light too. So, you know, there are going to be some ways to build around it. But
yeah, man,
before this episode, we were legitimately like, are we going to have enough if we just do the housekeeping and talk about the TWAB and maybe a handful of other things? And here we are creeping up on 40 minutes and we haven't even started breaking down the classes and subclasses yet. So I think it's probably time to hop right into that. Are you going to be upset if we start with the greatest class of all time, the Hunters first? I feel like because we both main Hunters, and it's funny, we actually split, like, our time that we don't play Hunters, we split and you play Warlock and I play Titan.
Yeah.
For the most part. So I think between the two of us, we'll have a pretty fair grasp at least of how things are going. So Hunters right now, post ability changes, biggest ability changes we've ever had. They were sweeping. They were universal. Pretty much everything was touched. How do you feel that Hunters are doing in the current sandbox right now?
I think Hunters are in great shape, and I think it has everything to do with jumping and nothing to do with abilities.
Yeah. Of course, Hunters just like the double jump.
Yeah, well, the dodge and the double jump make Hunters super maneuverable, and the hand cannon shotgun playstyle that we talked about being so dominant right now in the weapon PvP meta. Was it two episodes ago?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that playstyle is really great when you're a hunter. It's very, very suited to the hunter's natural mobility. And other classes have different styles of mobility, and can certainly take advantage of those weapons as well. But I think it would not be a stretch to say that Hunters might have the easiest, lowest effort time taking advantage of that playstyle using their movement abilities.
Would you say that you think Hunters overall are the most prevalent class in Destiny PvP right now?
Let's just say that if you told me that a quest required me to kill 1,000 guardians of one class, I would hope that it was Hunters. Because I would not finish it otherwise.
I was making a joke the other day that it took me 3 games to complete the Kill 5 Titans bounty that you get at the daily thing. So out of all the Hunters then, what subclass do you think you're seeing the most of right now? I was actually thinking about this and I was like, it's kind of a startlingly even split in my mind. I would have thought it would have skewed a lot higher in one direction, but it really kind of hasn't. I see a lot of each class, even Revenant still, which is really weird.
Yep, I am seeing a great variety of Hunters right now. Revenant still has some solid area control abilities and phenomenal stat splits. And if all you care about is great stat splits and occasionally being able to shut down an area, Revenant's still a solid choice for that. I'm also seeing a lot of top tree Night Stalker and Dodge and Viz, you know, with Hunter, with Revenant, sort of losing its undisputed title for Hunters. Dodge and Viz is just like the next lowest effort choice for an aggressive playstyle. It's, you know, everyone knows how to spot the invisible hunter now, but if you use it well, if you use it to reposition without appearing on radar, if you use it while in a group so that they lose track of you, there are a lot of ways to wreak havoc with that ability, and that's an ability that is up all the time. And then I'm also seeing some Arc Strider. I haven't seen as much, but I don't. That could just be some sample bias. I think Arc Strider is in a great place right now. So I don't know that it's getting less play. I'm especially, and it's the most noticeable of them, but I'm especially noticing Whirlwind Guard still showing up in my games. How about you?
You know, I really thought, prior to the season, when we were talking, we were looking at stuff, I really thought that Arc Strider was just going to be like far and away the best. I thought a lot of players, you know, Spectral Blade mains and Revenant mains, I thought were going to shift over to Arc Strider. It hadn't necessarily happened. The Arc Striders that I do run into are very, very strong with the kit that they have. But I've actually been seeing a lot of Gunslingers, which was kind of surprising to me. I think Blade Barrage got a really interesting buff by proxy with ability cooldowns kind of getting slower across the board. Blade Barrage's kit is really designed to get you your abilities back very quickly. And it's quite effective, actually, really effective. So I've seen Blade Barrage usage come up, which surprised me. And I think that that has kind of dragged Gunslinger usage up as a whole. Plus, the both Gunslinger classes that aren't Blade Barrage actually have something that's pretty strong about them. I mean, there's no denying that Six Shooter slay very, very strong super.
Yeah.
And Weighted Throwing Knife, I've seen the usage on Weighted Throwing Knife go up enough too to where I'm now noticing Weighted Throwing Knife players in a significant amount of my games. So in a weird turn of events, I feel like Gunslinger. Yeah, I mean, you know, Weighted Throwing Knife is one of those things where it's like the cooldown may be a little bit slower, but if you get a kill with it, you immediately get it back anyways.
Right.
So it completely bypasses that cooldown, and it's slower, but it's such a lethal one-hit kill. And without there being shoulder charges and without there being handheld supernovas, you know, if you want a one-hit kill ability, you're probably going Hunter now.
Yeah, yeah. Weighted Throwing Knife in its current form is sort of an interesting... It's like, it's almost like a linear fusion rifle, but with less aim assist. But it's a melee, so yeah, a significant amount less. I did experiment with Gunslinger, I didn't hate it. I did discover that I'm terrible with Weighted Throwing Knife right now, and I'm probably going to need to spend a lot of time practicing in patrol to try to get the hang of it again. But it's definitely got some potential. I will say that the solar subclasses with burn and explosion abilities of various kinds have great potential for picking up a lot of assists and cleanups, which is fantastic. It's something that I think they excel at, sometimes above the other subclasses. And I haven't not seen Gunslingers. I have seen a bit of Blade Barrage, more than I used to, I'd say. But yeah, it really is just across the board. Every type of hunter is getting representation right now.
I still see a fair amount of Spectral Blades. Probably see more Spectral Blades than I do see just normal standard Night Stalkers. You know, obviously I use Invis Dodge, but I think it's a pretty even split between people using melee Invis on bottom tree and people just using Spectral Blades. I've actually only seen like one or two other people using Invis Dodge in a way that was good enough to where I like actually noticed them using it well. So I think it's still probably one of the harder subclasses to use effectively. You can use it and use it badly, but to use it effectively is, I think, a little bit more difficult than people really give it credit for.
Fair enough.
But yeah, I think on the whole, you've really got to say that Hunter's still far and away the most popular class. I think it would probably honestly be difficult for me to say which subclass is the most popular now, which I've got to say is kind of a success in my eyes. It used to be, you know, for a long time, it was just Spectral Blades, and that was really it. And then it was just Revenant, and that was really it. And now I feel like depending on the playstyle, depending on the weapons you're choosing, depending on the activity in PvP, I feel like you could kind of get away with playing any of them and be pretty successful. And I think they might be the only class that can say that about their subs.
I would agree with that statement for sure. I think the Hunter classes are better balanced against each other than they have been for some time. I think there's a lot of room for different choices depending on your inclinations. Yeah. And I can't for sure say that one is better than another.
And it's not even really like, oh, even if you look at every single class and then you divide it up by subclasses, it's not even really like, oh, there's one subclass that's way better than, or sorry, there's one tree of each subclass that's way better even. You know, you look at Hunter, you have a reason, or you look at Gunslinger, you have a reason to run any one of the three trees in Gunslinger. You look at Night Stalker, you have a reason to run any one of the three trees in Night Stalker. Arc Strider, it's more really between two trees, I feel like personally, but there's still a reason to run multiple trees. And then Revenant obviously does its own thing, but that's kind of crazy to me, because you look at other stuff, you know, I guess we can probably move to Warlocks right now, But like, you look at Warlocks, and although Hunter's maybe the most prevalent class, I think that Dawnblade is the most prevalent subclass.
Yeah.
Like, Hunters combined may make up a larger percentage, but I do not believe that there's any one subclass that sees more play by itself than Dawnblade. I think it is that is the most popular individual subclass. And specifically, it's pretty much just Top Tree Dawn. Like,
yeah,
there's been an increase in well usage because the super comes so fast now. And I'm sure that there's at least 2 to 3 people who use Bottom Tree. But it really is Top Tree Dawn is so strong and so good that I don't know if you feel the same way, but I really feel like it's probably single-handedly the best subclass in the game right now.
It's incredibly strong, and the skill ceiling on it is really high. And this was actually hammered home to me in a match this week when I was in cover holding down a point. I had kind of secured a choke point by myself and was holding it down, hoping that my team was going to show up. And I get sniped. And I'm like, I'm in cover. No one has a line of sight on me. How did that happen? And then it goes to the kill cam, and there's a Warlock in midair, 20 meters off the edge of the map. And he double dodges and floofs. He dodged, floofed, dodged. I don't remember the specific order now. But regardless, he makes it back to safety after having sniped me out there. And I was just like, I'm not even mad.
Like the Ron Burgundy thing, like, I'm not even mad. That's impressive.
Yeah, because I had seen the ping on my radar, but I knew that there was nowhere to get a line of sight on me from that direction. So I just didn't look because I was like, he's probably trying to snipe me. I'm not going to peek. I'm going to force them to come in close where I can jotun them. And
Jotuny says, so yes. It's not just me.
No, I say it too. I was, you know, pre-charging, getting ready to pop out and burn anybody who tried to come through. And boy, they saw through that ruse. I'll tell you what. So Top Tree Dawn is just phenomenal. And the changes that they made did nerf it. I will grant that. They did bring its strength down. That said, it's really the fact that everything about that kit is super, super strong. Super is great. The movement abilities are best in class. The melee is very effective, even after the nerf. The grenades are fine. Like, there's nothing that you can say against it, in my mind.
I gotta agree with you there. Trying to think. Stormcaller, Voidwalker, Shadebinder. Shadebinder, I think, is still quite strong. The super is just really, really, really powerful. Even with the slow cooldown, really powerful.
It's still, I think, the best like super dueling super in the game. The only super that I would want to take against it is Top Tree Dawn, because you can probably evade that freeze with Top Tree Dawn. It's just about the only super that can. I've lost a few super duels to them with a variety of subclasses. It's very frustrating. So yeah, they're very good. Stormcallers. I think Stormcallers might be slightly underrated right now because Top Tree Dawn is so popular, and rightly so. That said, I have still had a phenomenally positive experience with Bottom Tree Stormcaller. Arc buddies remain very helpful in close range encounters to increase your, or improve, I should say, your time to kill. Landfall is a devastatingly powerful ability. You can wipe so many people off the map. Doesn't matter what, you know, if they're in a super of any kind, it just absolutely dissolves them. It's fantastic. And then, you know, the super itself is fine. It's not overpowered at this point. It's certainly not as good at dueling as some of the other ones, and definitely requires a little more care than it used to, but it's good.
Yeah, I am. You know, I probably see by far the most top three Dawns, and then second, a good bit of Shadebinder still. I think bottom tree Stormcaller is probably the next most prevalent. I don't see a lot of Chaos Reach anymore in PvP.
Yeah.
That was huge, huge, huge for a while.
It's basically disappeared for me as
well.
Yeah,
just don't see it. Top tree, really the best part of top tree is Ionic Blink, which is only effective in your super, and you get the super so much slower now than you did before.
Yeah.
I feel like it's really kind of taken that class down a notch. However, I will say I got killed by Arcweb the other day, which it has been a very, very long time since I've been killed by that. But a guy threw a pulse grenade into a group of us that were capturing a point, and the Arcweb chained around, and some of us had already taken damage and it killed us. And I was pretty surprised by it, but I it's definitely not common. I don't see a lot of people doing that. I don't see a lot of people building into it. I have a suspicion that I maybe could find a way to make that work with the right combination of grenades and cooldowns and damage buffs and stuff. But you know, I don't know if I'm going to put the energy into it, because really it's like you said, you know, bottom tree is just so much fun right now. The Arc Souls, although a little bit slower than they were before, are still great. They're still great with Getaway Artist.
Yep.
Like you said, Landfall's great.
I got to tell you, if you play Le Monarch aggressively, and I know you do, the Getaway Artist Arc Buddy is super helpful when you don't have Charge with Light Up. It's very...
Yeah, but then I can't crutch Oathkeepers. Come on now. We know how I play.
I'm just saying. I found it to be hilarious that Le Monarch has just that many ways to abuse it.
I think bottom tree Stormcaller still may be one of the best ways to run the stag as well.
Mm-hmm. It is. It's really good.
It pairs really super well. Electro Stack Surge is great. You know, Rift lasts longer, charges faster when enemies are near. Still less effective than it used to be, right? Because a bunch of stuff got nerfed, but still very effective in comparison's sake. So Stormcaller still pretty happy with where it's at. You know, I think we can be honest with ourselves that the individual trees that the Warlocks have are not quite as well balanced as they are on Hunter. For Dawnblades, it's pretty much top tree. For Stormcars, it's pretty much bottom tree.
Yeah.
For Voidwalkers, not a ton of Voidwalkers out there. I don't feel like. I see a Nova Bomb every once in a while. I believe Savathun is a Voidwalker. I think I saw her chuck a Nova Bomb in the most recent trailer.
Indeed. One thing I wanted to mention that surprised me running Stormcaller, because I haven't used this grenade in a long time. Almost everybody uses the Pulse Grenade, as far as I can tell. Occasionally Arc Bolts, but I see a lot of Stormcallers throwing Pulse Grenades. The Storm Grenade is super, super effective. You have to use it, like your throw has to be accurate. But it is, I think, by far the most efficient way to kill or flush any number of Guardians who are in cover. If you throw it accurately, it's just an outright... It'll just kill them. It's really good.
And I'm pretty sure with Arcweb that if it direct hits one person and there's a second person by them, it will kill the first person that direct hits too. I think it does enough damage to do that.
Yeah,
definitely. Storm grenades are definitely a little bit underrated comparatively.
They also recharge super fast if you're using them with Getaway Artists, which is what I've been pairing them with. So then you have a great option of either I can either throw a grenade to flesh the person that I just shot, and or finish them off if they don't run. And for some reason they never seem to run. They underestimate the storm grenade. But it's up super fast with bottom tree between Rising Storm and I guess just with Rising Storm. For some reason, I was thinking of something else, but just with Rising Storm, your melee helping to recharge and building into grenades, you'll have that grenade back constantly. And so it's a great combo. Got nothing on Top Tree Dawn. It still takes it out, but the neutral game is strong. I don't see a lot of purple Warlocks at all.
Which Nova Bomb, or not Nova Bomb, Nova Warp got a like kind of middling buff where they were like, oh, we want to be a little bit stronger. It was probably a better PvE buff than it was PvP. Don't see a ton of Nova Warps, I'll be totally honest. I feel like more Cataclysm, like Slova Bombs. I feel like I see more of those than Bottom Tree.
Mm-hmm.
But in my opinion, I think Bottom Tree, maybe it's because it's kind of more difficult to use because it requires kills to really proc the most special thing about it, which is Devour. I actually think that Attunement of Hunger is one of the strongest subclasses out there. I have seen it be used at a high level that the skill ceiling on is just incredible. It's so, so strong. Devour is so strong.
Yep.
It really is. And it may just be that it's hard enough to use that a lot of people don't really take advantage of it. But it still kind of is weird to me that like we don't see more Attunement of Hunger, especially in like high level play. But you know, Attunement of Hunger is really like it's like an Iron Banner style of thing, because you have to chain kills really to get Devour to really give you the bonuses that you need. You have to be able to go from kill to kill to kill to kill, right?
Yeah.
And I guess in Trials, that's not really the way that works. And Survival a little bit more. I think it's really underrated. I think it's really, really strong. I guess just most people don't want to put the investment into it when you can Top Tree Dawn, or you can Bottom Tree Stormcaller, or you can Shadebinder. Attunement of Fission, I'm not super stoked on right now. I don't see a lot of them. And from the small amount of time I've spent fighting against them, I've never really been impressed by anyone using it. Like, I've never seen anyone just, especially with handheld Supernova getting nerfed, I've never seen anyone do anything that was just like, wow, holy shit, like, that's a great Nova Warp player. Really, the defining ability of that tree is the super, and of course, supers are less prevalent now. I feel like any tree that the defining ability was the super kind of got dumped on a little bit in PvP with these most recent changes.
Yeah, that's not unfair. I can't play handheld Supernova because it requires me to change my controller scheme. Because my grenade is not on a button that I can move and aim.
Yeah. So you can you can kind of write Nova Warp off. Now, Attunement of Chaos, haven't seen a ton of it, but I actually kind of only think it's a matter of time. A lot of people have made videos about this recently, either complaining or showing how to do it, but Chaos Accelerant to overcharge your grenade and then use the Axion Bolt grenades that basically chase you down and do a ton of damage when they're overcharged. Mm-hmm. Pretty cheesy as far as stuff goes. I've heard a couple of people complaining that in Trials they're running into teams of three of these, and they're basically just all overcharging their Axion Bolt grenades and throwing them and hoping that the tracking and splash damage basically finishes people off. Haven't seen a lot of it in Control and Iron Banner just yet. But like I said, I was kind of surprised how many Slova Bombs I was seeing, and I'm pretty sure it's because of that specific part of the build.
Yeah.
Right. It's the Axion Bolt with Chaos Accelerant. And also, you know, they have Bloom, right? So if you can pair Chaos Accelerant with an Axion Bolt, get a kill with it, it blooms. You know, you can wipe a squad of people if they're sitting behind a corner together. And Slova Bomb is just kind of a hilarious meme super anyway. So if Top Tree Dawn gets nerfed and nothing happens to this, especially with we've got the Void changes coming and Witch Queen, it wouldn't surprise me to see this usage go up a little bit as people learn a little bit more about it or get play against it and get really frustrated by it and then swap to it as the next month or so progresses.
Yeah, I would agree. It's definitely one of those things where it can be very effective. Axiom Bolt's weakness has always been the fact that they're fairly easy to escape if you turn and run. But I could certainly see in Trials that being a pretty frustrating strategy if you've got a team of three. I mean, three anything is often pretty frustrating to run into in trials. But if they can get your team forcing you to flee their Axiom Bolts and then they press you, that's going to be an unpleasant time. So we'll see. We'll see if people pick it up.
In summary, Warlocks are in a pretty decent place, too. I think you could argue at the top end they're maybe stronger than Hunters with Top Tree Dawn. They certainly have got some really strong builds that you can spec into. I actually feel like they're, if with Hunters, all three trees are pretty even with each other. I think for most of the Warlocks, it's like you got two options that are okay, two or one option. With Top Tree Dawn is obviously far and away the best, but I think Well of Radiance is very strong when played correctly. I just don't think a ton of people like it, but I personally play Well of Radiance almost exclusively when I play Warlock. Stormcaller, I mean, Bottom Tree is great. Bottom Tree is really the only great one for Stormcaller, but for Voidwalker, I think you could go top or bottom tree. You know, Top Tree is probably better for 3v3 for trials. Bottom trees might be better for sixes. But I feel like either one of those is a solid choice. So Warlocks, not so bad.
Yeah.
Titans, on the other hand. Ooh, baby. Ooh, baby.
Titans.
I'm not stoked about where Titans are at right now. Like I said, the thing I made earlier wasn't a joke. Like, it took me three games to kill five Titans. I think one game I legitimately didn't have any Titans in it at all. I kind of feel like Titans got hit a little bit harder than the other subclasses did with these changes. And I know a lot of people are keeping their fingers crossed that Void 3.0 is going to help. But Void 3.0 is only going to help the Sentinel. And Sunbreaker and Striker, they still need a little bit too.
It's a rough time right now to be a Titan, and I don't know if there's any way to sugarcoat it. With Shoulder Charge as an ability class, being now a movement ability primarily, and more of a standard melee rather than a one hit kill, the identity has definitely changed. Some people are fine with those changes. Some people are good with it, but a lot of people, I think, were definitely thrown by that. And at least in my mind, for most of the Striker subclasses, the super is a huge part of the identity of the subclass. Striker perhaps being one of the few that is an exception, where I strongly associate lightning grenades with Strikers. I still have some very negative emotional reactions to lightning grenades appearing on the wall behind me, left over from Destiny 1. So, but other than that, I largely associate the super with the Titan classes, and with supers not being around as much, like you said, it hurts. It hurts big time. The neutral game for Strikers needs a lifeline tossed to it at this point.
Yeah, I think Code of the Missile is still okay. Still pretty decent. I see a fair amount of Code of the Missiles.
I do see a lot of those. I Jotuned one out of the air. I felt bad about it.
I'm sure he felt much worse about it. Geez, I don't know. I feel like the other classes have a lot more to offer. You know, Code of the Juggernaut, what it really, really was it was the super. Like, that was what made that class super, super strong. It had some other stuff, but it was really the super that was, I feel like, a lot of the reason why people played that. And now the super takes a long time to show up. And like, super o'clock still happens, but it happens, you know, 7 minutes into the match. And we mentioned it with the other classes, but I feel like subs that were really focused around their super kind of just took a little bit of a downturn. I still feel like Striker is probably the most played Titan subclass by far. I don't think it's probably really close. Maybe Behemoth. Behemoth might be a little bit up there. I really thought Behemoth was going to be just totally wrecked for PvP with how weak it was, but I still see people using the movement abilities that it's got and getting all over the place and kind of just like ignoring the actual, you know, kind of just like ignoring the actual abilities themselves to deal damage and basically just using them for movement.
So I don't personally see a ton of Behemoths. What I see the most of are Strikers, of course. I see Burning Maul actually pretty regularly.
I'm very surprised by that. I think I've probably seen one Burning Maul in, geez, when was the last time I even saw Burning Maul? It might have been last night. I might have seen someone with a Burning Maul the other night. But like, when was the last time you remember yourself getting bonked with one of those throwing hammers? I feel like it's been so long.
I couldn't tell you.
Yeah.
I see them. I don't usually get killed by the abilities. But yeah, they're definitely out there. And then I definitely see people running Sentinel as well still, which I can always tell because I see the super, and that's about the only way I can tell. That or I get hit by a suppressor grenade.
You mean the bubble? You see him running Ward of Dawn compared to the actual Captain America, or you see him running the Captain America super?
Both, actually. I think it's starting to shift toward more Ward of Dawn in my games. It could be a temporary thing, but I'm still seeing a fair amount of Sentinel Titans out there of both varieties. I couldn't tell you which of the Captain America trees they're running. Actually, I could, because I never see Banner Shield used ever. So it's got to be bottom tree.
Yeah, it's not the...
Like, wait a minute. No, there's a... It's there definitely not identifying. yeah. There's an identifying ability, and it's that one. So, yeah.
I mean, I feel like I see a lot more Code of the Protector, which is the Ward of Dawn. I feel like I see a lot more of that than I do Aggressor. Reason being, because Aggressor had Shield Bash, which now Shield Bash is basically just a movement ability. So you're really only going to see people take advantage of that in like relatively high level play. Secondarily, like the Doomfang Pauldron was like the Code of the Aggressor exotic, at least to me, and mm-hmm. that kind of got a nerf as well. Definitely isn't nearly as effective. Second Shield is a perk that's only active when your super is up, so that's not really super effective. In the Trenches, as kills while surrounded by enemies reduce the cooldown of your super. Not happening all the time in PvP. And then Superior Arsenal, grenade kills, recharge your grenade energy, while you're rarely getting kills with suppressor grenades, right?
Yep.
So to me, like having played a couple of these, like I tried to give Code of the Aggressor a shot, and I just didn't really feel like it was highly effective, unfortunately, outside of being like, oh, I can fly all over the place now with my Shield Bash. Code of the Protector, on the other hand, I feel like still has a lot of utility to it, especially in things like Trials or Game Modes. I mean, it's gonna have more utility come Void for 3.0, because we know that they're splitting off Ward of Dawn and making a much faster charging super than it has right now. Right now, it's hurt by being, you know, paired to Sentinel Shield itself. But I've still seen people use it pretty effectively too. It obviously provides weapons light, which is fantastic. I mean, shoot, I know whenever someone on my team has a Ward of Dawn, I will like magnetize right to that thing because I want that weapons light with my Le Monarch. So I see a fair bit of that. Like you said, nowhere close to as much Striker. But I'd hazard a guess that there's probably more Code of the Protectors out there than there are top tree Strikers. You know, Code of the Earthshaker, like, oof. Outside of the additional grenade charge, really don't see a lot of Earthshakers out there. So I'd be willing to bet that there's probably more Ward of Dawns than there are Earthshakers out there.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with you at all. Well, I think that about sums it up. Titan subclasses need some help. I'd really love to see them get some neutral game adjustments that give them some more interesting interactions, some stuff maybe to make the shoulder charge-esque abilities more interesting and more visually noticeable and experientially rewarding. If we're not going to be one-hit killing with those, then I think Guardians need to have something that really identifies the subclass when they use it. And that makes you feel like, you know, this is a valuable tool other than just for movement. And I don't know that they have it at the moment.
I have seen more people using Code of the Siegebreaker, which is the Sunspot. Mm-hmm. Sunspot. Yeah. Sunspot Sunbreaker. Jeez. I have seen more people using that recently.
I would agree.
I think people are realizing the benefits of being able to grant those little sunspots, both in their super and outside of their super, which empower themselves and their teammates. So I have seen a handful more of those. I don't see a ton of hammer strike sunbreakers. You know, every once in a while I'll get hit with one of the throwing hammers that from the super that explodes and kills me from quite a distance away, and I know that they were running it. But I really do feel like I'm seeing more Code of the Siegebreakers and Code of the Devastators. But like you said, I feel like it's hard out there to be a Titan player. I'm not even a Titan main. Titan's my second class, but I was most disappointed with the changes on Titan, more so than I was Hunter or Warlock. So I do hope with Void 3.0 they get something. But I don't know that that's going to help the other two Titan classes enough to bump their usage up.
Well, you know, I think it's fair to say that when Void 3.0 drops, or did I say that right? Void 3.0. Yeah. It's going to be 3 months of nonstop Void subclasses for everyone. So hopefully that makes the pill easier to swallow, that the other ones don't get any help until they do get some help. We get, you know, maybe Solar 3.0 next, or Arc. I don't know which one's coming after Void, but and then it'll be 3 straight months of that.
Aren't we lucky?
And and so we won't, you know, again, we won't mind so much, hopefully, that the other one has been left in the cold, because we know it's going to get its turn in the sun.
All right, guys. Well, I think that is it for this episode. Thank you guys for joining us on episode 244 of the Master Breakdown Podcast. Remember to tune in on Monday to Beneath Twin Suns. I'm going to be releasing that, talking about episodes 2 and 3 of Book of Boba Fett. And I believe the PvE show will be released either Monday evening or Tuesday morning, depending on when that gets wrapped up as well. So again, thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
Peace.